The ultimate goal is to get back to carbon dioxide levels or CO2 equivalent levels of under 300 parts per million. So that is the pre-industrial levels of CO2 in the atmosphere were about 280 parts per million. So ever since basically humans started burning fossil fuels and associated things that are warming our planet, we're up in the 400, low 400s, maybe like 420 or something right now. So we're way, way higher than we've ever been at when humans have existed on the planet. And so the idea is to bring those levels back.
That is Rick Wayman, who until last week was the CEO of the Foundation for Climate Restoration. The foundation has had significant changes in its funding arrangements just recently, and because of that, Rick has stepped back from his role as CEO. He talks about that during this interview, and it should be mentioned, however, he is still deeply interested in the work of the foundation and emotionally invested in its goals. It was during the early statement that Rick was commenting about the goals of the Foundation for Climate Restoration. Welcome to this latest episode of Climate Conversations. I am your host, Robert McLean. It's so great to have you along. This podcast is assembled here in Shepparton, in northern Victoria, Australia, on the lands of the Yorta Yorta people. Yes, the stolen lands of the Yorta Yorta people, and I pay my respects to their elders, past, present, and emerging. I talked with Rick very briefly, because he was a busy man during the Foundation's fifth annual summit, about setting up an interview for this episode of Climate Conversations, and without hesitation, he said yes. Let's have a listen now to that conversation. Tell me about how you got involved with the Foundation.
Sure. So, gosh, this was about 2 years ago now. I was working for a startup company here in Southern California, and we were working on sustainable modular housing, and it was exciting and new and good. You know, it was a good thing for the planet. You know, the mission was aligned, but it didn't light me up. It didn't kind of get me out of bed every day like, yes, let's do this thing. And so I was looking for that because I had it in a past job that I had, very, very mission aligned with my own approach and whatnot. So I was looking for that again. And I happened upon the Foundation for Climate Restoration at the right time, when they were looking for someone with my background and skills. So it was really a great fit. And
that was just a few years ago.
Yeah, 2 years ago.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You were the CEO, or you are the CEO. Tell me about that role. And I think the organization is changing, so you can tell me what's going on there.
Yeah, so it actually has changed just about a week ago. So as of about a week ago, I am no longer the CEO. The quick version of that is we were, for about the first 5.5 years of our existence as an NGO, we were primarily funded by one family. And by primarily, it ranged anywhere from 100% to maybe like 50 to 60%. And they unfortunately, unexpectedly came into an economic situation where they were no longer able to support the organization at any level, much less the very substantial level that they had been supporting us. So we had to make some changes. And, that things evolve, right? Things change over time. And so we were rolling with that. So I got to work very closely with the board of directors to figure out what our best move is. We had spent 5.5 years really building up a lot of momentum behind a concept that hadn't really been introduced prior to the foundation. You know, maybe a little bit here and there. We didn't want to lose that. And that was our top priority. Not only to not lose the momentum of the very good programs that we had, but also not to lose the momentum of the fantastic global community that we had built. And so we decided that what we would do is we would seek to hand off a number of programs to partner NGOs who could pick them up and run with them. And so that was actually a very exciting process to go through dozens and dozens of conversations. And we landed on some excellent partners to hand off some programs to, and we feel really good about that. So I couldn't be more pleased about that. And the other part that the organization decided to keep was to keep that vibrant community of volunteers that is currently structured as sort of a local chapters structure with I believe 44 chapters in 19 countries. So they're hanging on to that. A number of those volunteers have stepped into leadership roles on a voluntary basis now, but have stepped into leadership roles to keep the organization going and, you know, see what this next evolution brings.
So what's your role now, Rick?
I actually don't have a role. What I decided to do was to step away fully for the moment and allow that process to unfold, right? The people who have stepped up deserve the space to make the decisions.
Do you have personal plans?
So what I want to do is find my next professional opportunity, figure out exactly how demanding that is going to be, and then if I have time to be involved with F4CR on a voluntary basis, absolutely I would. The mission is something that I believe so strongly in, and it, you know, it was a pleasure for me for 2 years to get to do that work as my profession. You know, it's something that I would have loved to have been involved in as a volunteer anyway. So that's really where I stand right now is hopefully
Where did the idea for climate restoration come from?
Well, really it began quite a few years ago, maybe a decade or so ago. The founder of F4CR, Peter Fukowski, and his wife, Sharon, who co-founded the organization, Peter had been doing a lot of climate work with NGOs that they were doing very good work, very important work. But what Peter kept coming back to is the goal that they have, if they are wildly successful, is still going to be catastrophic for people on the planet. And so he was wondering to himself, why don't we set a goal that is actually something that we want to achieve? And that's really where it all started, was just the seed of a thought, you know, and what is a goal versus what is sort of a negotiated random number that a bunch of diplomats came up with that they thought might kind of satisfy everyone.
Yeah.
So I love that. You know, in any negotiation, you've got to go for what you want. You can't start out at the middle point or even worse than the middle point and expect to be happy with the outcome.
How broadly was the idea of climate restoration taken up?
Well, just in the 2 years that I was involved, I saw a massive shift. So one of the first things that I got to do as CEO was to go to COP26 in Glasgow. And the idea of carbon dioxide removal, methane removal, and other techniques that would lead to climate restoration, they were very much sidelined. It was a fringe idea. And that changed a lot in the year up to COP27, about 6 months ago in Egypt. It was all over the place. People were talking about it. People who I specifically had conversations with in Glasgow who were like, oh yeah, you know, we got to focus on emissions. We got to focus on net zero. Came back to them a year later. They're like, let's do this. Let's, you know, removals, super important. A big part of that, I think, was kind of the scientific cover that the IPCC gave. Now, the IPCC said carbon removal is going to be necessary in any pathway in which we achieve 1.5 degrees of warming. Now, that's not climate restoration, but it is normalizing the idea of removing a large amount of greenhouse gas from the atmosphere. So I think that really opened people's minds to it a bit. And then the narrative of setting a goal that we actually want to achieve is really compelling. And I think as people go on and experience more and more of the drastic effects of the climate crisis, you know, they don't want to see this continue forever. And so restoration is an idea that really sticks.
Yeah. Can you explain to me what a climate restoration really is? What does that actually mean?
Sure. So the ultimate goal is to get back to carbon dioxide levels or CO2 equivalent levels of under 300 parts per million. So that is the pre-industrial levels of CO2 in the atmosphere were about 280 parts per million. Mm. So ever since basically humans started burning fossil fuels and associated things that are warming our planet, we're up in the 400, low 400s, maybe like 420 or something now. So we're way, way higher than we've ever been at when humans have existed on the planet. And so the idea is to bring those levels back. Now, there are a number of ways to go about doing that. Carbon dioxide removal is a really broad area. It encompasses a lot of different techniques, a lot of different ideas. Many of them are nature-based and really mimic the processes that nature has perfected over millions of years. But we don't have millions of years, right? We've got tens of years if we're lucky. So a lot of what's being looked into right now relates to accelerated natural solutions. And then, of course, there are also various technological solutions that are in varying stages of development that could hold some promise as well. But that's the idea. Climate restoration is bringing the levels of greenhouse gas back to pre-industrial levels.
How do you feel about the successes or otherwise of the foundation?
Well, I'm really proud of what we accomplished in a short period of time. You know, the foundation is small. It has always been small. So there's no way that we were going to be able to accomplish this mission on our own, right? We had to build a movement. And so we were really successful in doing that in the community that we've been building globally, as I mentioned, now numbering in the many hundreds of dedicated volunteers. We had a very successful youth leadership training program that was training young people aged, 14 to 24, and really setting them on a path to adopt the climate restoration lens in whatever they end up doing in their life. So that is actually one of the programs that we managed to hand off to a partner organization that's going to take it forward and keep it going and keep engaging the alumni. So I feel really good about that as well. But overall, what we've always been trying to do and what the organization is still trying to do is change the paradigm, change the way that people think about the climate crisis. It feels hopeless a lot of the time because it's such a big problem, and one individual's actions are not able to change it, right? It's got to be a huge, wide-scale systems change in order to be successful. So it can feel disempowering. But when this community comes together, you begin to realize every problem that humanity has ever overcome has started by feeling impossible. And it started with imagination, started with an idea, and built up from there. That's what's happening right now with climate restoration. So I have no doubt that it's going to be successful. It's just in the early stages right now.
Yeah. How many members have you got, Rick?
There are about 5,000 or so people who I think that we always counted as members. So people who opted into our communications, who engaged with us that way, and maybe another 5,000 or so that were following us on social media. But you know, the other part of it is we worked very closely with a number of partner NGOs around the world. And while their constituencies were not officially our members, we were able to reach a large number of people regularly through the sort of megaphones that the partners provided.
You've lost your primary funder, but how do you fund the foundation now?
Well, what they're doing right now is really, well, we unfortunately had to cut almost all of our paid staff and shift into this volunteer-led effort. So the expenses are way down. So funding it is going to be much more manageable for the time being. But you know, I don't think that they want to be a volunteer-led effort forever. There are a lot of benefits to having professional staff on board. So I think that what they're doing is continuing to get the word out there. They've got a good core of recurring donors who are donating $10 a month or $1,000 a month or whatever it is, right? But a core who are continuing to stand behind it financially. And as they continue to get the message out, and as more and more people around the world recognize the need for climate restoration, I think that what they want to do is find those big funders who can come in and put some extremely meaningful dollars behind it to sustain it and allow it to grow.
Is there any government funding available for organizations such as the one you were involved with?
Well, there is a little bit here and there, but it's quite complicated at the moment. There's a lot of hope among NGOs like the foundation that as the new funds from the U.S. government through the IRA, the Inflation Reduction Act, come through and start to be distributed by the government, that there will be a good amount available for things like public education on the climate crisis in general and specifically on greenhouse gas removal. But we're not seeing a lot of that right now. And it's really unfortunate because there's a lot of hunger among the population for this kind of
thing. What's happening now with the climate movement, and where are we headed?
Well, you know, the climate movement, like many movements, has different parts and different streams and different focuses. The hope is that they're all moving in parallel, right? There are a lot of people who are rightly concerned about emissions mitigation, the energy transition, those kind of immediate things that need to happen. There's a whole nother set in the movement that is focused on adaptation, right? Adapting to the changing climate, helping people who live in particularly vulnerable areas to either relocate or shore up their defenses against the increasing climate catastrophes. And then really the next side of it, the next part of the movement is the restoration part of the movement. So thinking a bit more long-term, what happens after the energy transition? What happens after we hit net zero? We've got to be ready. Because if let's just say if we hit net zero by 2050, the CO2 levels in the atmosphere are going to be way higher than they are today, because carbon dioxide stays in the atmosphere for centuries, right? So even if we get to net zero, that's not going to be good enough. It's going to look worse than it looks today. So we've got to be ready to scale up. And that's what the restoration side of the movement is trying to do.
I've got two questions about what should the individual be doing and what should the world be doing right now?
Yeah, well, you know, as an individual, like I said before, there's not a whole lot we can do as an individual to restore the climate. I personally cannot, you know, I can plant a couple of trees in my yard and things like that, right? But that's not going to make a dent in the big problem that we have. It's good. It helps. You know, every tree that we have on the planet is a good thing. So I would not discourage anyone from doing that. But what I encourage people not to stop there, right? So when you're thinking about, you know, obviously your own carbon footprint, you want to reduce that as much as possible. Clearly, I mean, that's just part of being a good citizen in general, is to make sure that you're leaving things in as good of a condition as possible. But really, when it comes to restoring the climate, what an individual can do, I think right now, the most important thing that a person can do is talk to their elected officials about it. And that's on a local level. Here in the United States, it's also on a state level, as well as on the national level. Elected officials, they deal with thousands of different issues. And so you can't necessarily fault them for not having climate restoration on their radar. But once they do, a lot of them get really lit up by it and are ready to move. And that's, I think, what needs to happen in this relatively early stage of climate restoration. We need resolutions on a city level, on a state level, on a national level where we can get them. We need government policies in place to procure low carbon and eventually carbon negative concrete, for example. There are a lot of things that people can do that way. And I always encourage people not to act alone. You don't have to be alone in this effort, especially now that we're in an era where, you know, you're in Australia, I'm in California, right? But we're talking in real time. It's my afternoon, it's your morning. It's convenient, right? We can connect, we can do this. And with the global community of climate restoration that is continuing to grow, you can find allies, even if they don't live in your neighborhood. You can find people to support you and do this work together. You don't have to do it alone.
You just mentioned the fact that I'm in Australia. Does the foundation have representatives in Australia?
There are a few people who are involved in Australia, but it certainly could be a lot more significant. You know, Australia is a very big country, a very influential country, and so I think that a lot more could happen there.
So how do I become a member? How do I become a member?
Yeah, the best way to do that is to go to the website, foundationforclimaterestoration.org. You could also do f4cr.org. That'll take you to the same place. And read a bit more about the foundation's approach. And you'll also see contact information there. So that's really the easiest way and the most straightforward way to get involved.
Rick, predictions can be the work of the devil, but do you have any predictions about where we're headed with all this?
Well, I think that things are going to continue to get a little bit worse before they get better, but I strongly believe that they're going to get better. And the reason I believe that is not sort of naive pie in the sky hope. It's because I've been on the ground for 2 years talking to people, seeing what the what the innovators are doing, talking with elected officials, seeing what they're doing already in their areas, and also what they have planned for the future. This is going to happen. We are going to restore the climate, but you know, my prediction, unfortunately, is, you know, we're not going to snap our fingers and have it start getting better tomorrow morning, right? It's going to take a while. That transition is going to take a while, but we can't lose hope in the meantime as we see things getting worse. You know, as we see this huge typhoon hitting Guam today, right? We can't lose hope and feel that all is lost, and we might as well just put our heads in the sand. You know, we've got to keep at this, and we can succeed.
Rick, I don't have any more particular questions. Is there something else you'd like to say?
I think that's really it. I think you covered it with right. All of your questions. Just grateful for the people who hear about climate restoration and pay attention, right? You know, it's the easiest thing to do is to not pay attention, to let someone else take care of the problem, right? I personally am not fully responsible for the climate crisis, right? I've played a small part, but I'm not personally responsible for it. So why should I personally spend all of my free time trying to turn it around, right? Or it's hopeless. Why should I even bother trying? It's easy to think that way. I would just send a big thank you to all of the people who hear about it and realize, you know what? I'm a human being along with 8 billion other fellow human beings on the planet, all the other living beings that we share this planet with. We can do what we can to make it better. Absolutely. And I really admire that about people, about the growing community that is embracing climate restoration. And I'm really hopeful that continues.
Thanks, Rick. I appreciate the chance to talk with you. It's been great.
Yeah, thank you so much. I appreciate the opportunity.
Yes, thanks, Rick. As was clear in that interview, Rick is no longer the CEO of Foundation for Climate Restoration following a major restructure of the organization, but Rick still has the well-being of the foundation at heart. It seems to me that the goal of the foundation is just wonderful, and it reminds me of what happens after a revolution. A revolution is not an end in itself. There has to be something on the next page. There has to be somewhere to go. We have to have something to do after the revolution. And so, once we've achieved net zero, we have to have the next step. And the foundation, it talks about that. We've reached the end of this episode of Climate Conversations. Thanks so much for your company. It's been great to have you along. Now, wasn't Rick a fascinating guy? And isn't the organization he was representing, Foundation for Climate Restoration, an equally fascinating organization? What a great job they're doing. So until we talk again, please take care, stay safe, and please be kind. For everyone you meet is fighting a great battle. And please, if you enjoyed this episode, I'd urge you to share it with your friends. In fact, I'd love you to share it with your friends, because we all need to know all we possibly can about the climate crisis and how we should respond, what we should be asking our decision makers to actually do. Also, I'd love to hear from you. You can contact me at r.mclean7@icloud.com. So until we talk again, please take care. Dear oh dear, I always forget something. I'd urge you to subscribe to this podcast, because if you do that, every time I publish a new episode, you will be automatically alerted. Now please take care.